Wonderful. Good morning, friends of the middleware and early risers. I hope the headache is in bounds. If it's not, you have another chance tonight. We're here this morning gathered together to talk about service bus solution patterns. I think it's called, actually, whose idea was the official title of the session? Achieving enterprise integration patterns with Windows Azure Service Bus.
I think it evolved organically from where the deck started, but what it ended up is a more end-to-end look at how customers are using, so hence the solution patterns.
Oh, okay. So my name is Clemens Fastas. I'm principal technical lead in the Windows Azure Service Bus team. I do technical strategy for the Service Bus team and do prototyping, new developments. You're going to see one of those things today, things where we're going to go in the future, in the middle section of this talk. And you?
I'm Abhishek Lal. I'm a program manager with the Service Bus team. I own the developer SDKs, the tooling, all our API surface, and making sure Clemens doesn't fall off stage.
Yes. So, what we have for you today in 75 minutes is a look at a few customer use cases, things that customers do which are telling you how to build hybrid applications, what they're specifically doing. So we're going to walk through some of those use cases and how people are using Service Bus in those cases. So these are actual customer scenarios. We're not going to name the names of the customers, but we're effectively going to give you kind of the general solution pattern for this. Then we're going to talk about the detailed patterns that are used in those scenarios. So we're leaning on Gregor Hope's book, the Enterprise Application Integration Patterns book. I think we have a picture of that book also in the... So if you don't have that book yet, that's a very good standard book that everybody should have, even though Gregor works for Google now.
Or does he?
Yes.
We'll remove the picture very soon.
So, a thing we're also going to talk about is device integration. So, if I switch over to even now on the inside, you're on three?
Four.
Oh, you're on four. I'm on three. So, we'll have this thing, and we're going to explain to you what that does, and I'm going to show you a little bit of code for how to integrate this and what that actually has to do with Service Bus. So, we'll talk about that. In the middle of it, go back to the PowerPoint, and then also talk about access control and provisioning and the provisioning concerns in that context. So this talk is about solutions and how Service Bus helps with those solutions and enterprise integration patterns also kind of in that sense. So before we go there, there's the picture. Before we go there, here are all these goals: data information portals, data replication, shared business functions. So these are all these kind of enterprise goals, common enterprise goals, as per Gregor's book. And we're going to go and follow through with some of those the patterns, pick some of those patterns out. What we believe is that the future enterprise goals are going to be adding some more concerns here, specifically because enterprises start to talk more to their consumers. The enterprises have so far serviced their own employees. So we had scary scale was something like 10,000 people or 50,000 people. That was scary scale in the enterprise that everybody needed to scale up to. And people were priding themselves of having an application that can go and scale to 50,000. Now, if you're building an application, just an app on the phone that you give to all of your customers, and you are making... You're in the business of making wash machine detergent, or you're in the business of producing cars. If you're producing consumer goods, you have millions of customers. So all of a sudden, you need to manage reach to millions of people. And that's a pure enterprise concern. But it has nothing to do, or very little to do, with the scale characteristics and with the things that we have dealt with in classic enterprise. So we think that's going to change. It also changes how you do communication. No longer is communication something, and the middleware from the communication, something that you do on the inside, and that you effectively have as a, to the scale of a few hundred servers. But you actually now need to scale out and do communication with hundreds of thousands of devices or phones or tablets or those things. And also what we see is that because of the agility, because of agile, because something that is starting to get into people's head also in management, that this agility is something that's desirable and that's something that we want, that the development cycles actually go down. There's no more tolerance for having the three-year project that hopefully at the end will yield something, but there's the hope or there's the expectation that you can actually go and deliver new things, new software, every 2 months, every 3 months, because you see other people doing it. So we think that enterprise is going to be expanded, and that enterprise is going to move into more the way the web works, and the more the web cadence works, and also the way web scale works, because these are true enterprise concerns. So for those people who haven't been to the Service Bus session, the overview session, this is the new way how we talk about Service Bus, how we show Service Bus. So it's a bus, and you hang services off that bus. And effectively, we're kind of the communication fabric to talk through to your applications. So yeah, we have queues, we have topics, we have relays as the primitives you can put into Service Bus and that you can communicate through. And in the future, within the next six to 12 months, we're going to add more capabilities. One of them, for instance, is the notification topic. Notification topic will allow you to send push notifications into mobile screen devices, tablets, phones. And bridges will allow you to do more sophisticated transformations, etc., over and integration. And there's a session today, I think at 10:30, where Javed Sikander is going to talk about the future of integration. And you can listen to that. And the bridges are going to play a role in this.
It's at 2:45.
Oh, 2:45. All right. Okay, sorry. 2:45. So you'll see scenarios, or we see scenarios, and you might see them also mentioned in things like MSDN Magazine. I have an article in MSDN Magazine in this issue. It's free online. You just search for MSDN Magazine. And you can find an article about the Internet of Things. And I'm going to mention that here on stage. We're going to walk through the essence of that article of how to connect things, household appliances, point-of-sale kiosks, or point-of-sale solutions, all those things to a bus, to the Service Bus, to communicate with, to get information from the field or to send information out to the field, where the field might be a device that sits in the consumer household. It may be a control device that sits in a vehicle. And so it's more than just the integration bus that we're building. The way we think about Service Bus is not only something that works inside the data center as an intra-application pop-up thing, but really turns the focus of the application outside and creates the edge of your system where you can take application data in and where you can send application data out to devices, to things that sit on the edge. So let's get to some customer use cases. The first one is a web services case for retailers. Sorry, some uncontrolled animations there. So what we have here is we have a retailer scenario. That's a real case. This is actually, we can talk about that. That is Akite.
Yeah.
That's a solution from Bed-in-Shop Systems in Italy. And they're a very successful customer. They were actually on stage with me at the Build conference. And what they're doing is they're providing a web service, providing a SaaS solution for retail stores. So they're doing a shop solution where you can actually take the cashier's desk machine and you can seed it with information, pricing information, catalog information, etc. In this way, so going from the retailer's data center, or the, they have retailers of all sizes, so sometimes that's just a cabinet where data sits in, so it's not a data center per se, where the retailer can go and update their central catalog or update their central prices and then go and update all their retail stores in one go. So they have a master, and then they have a replication of the master into the stores, and they're doing that through this catalog distribution topic. So they use topics in Service Bus, and all their retail stores are listening on those topics, and so as soon as they have catalog changes, they go and push this out. actually getting the pricing changes and getting these catalog changes distributed into retail stores and into point of sale has been a hard problem for them until the service bus came around and just made that very easy because we have that thing just sitting in the cloud. So there's really no integration issues that they have in terms of networking setup and other constraints, but because from the retail store, you can basically just sit there as long as you can see the network, you can get to the topic and get all that data out. And the topic allows you for fan out of that data to multiple stores, so each store has a subscription, and so we send that data to that subscription. With the subscriptions, they also get wonderful targeting, because they can now go and have on the topic their stores, and the stores have a store number, they have a region, they have all kinds of criteria. So you can include, and they do that, include the criteria into the rules for the subscription so that you can now send targeted updates. So you can say, in this region, I'm going to make Coca-Cola this price. And you send this out, and all the retail stores in that region are going to get that new price, but nobody else will. So they're using PubSub for that purpose. On the other side, they also need to get, for instance, orders. They need to get their stock. They're going to need to get their stock replenished in the store. So they need to have, as they're selling things, there's an automated background processing happening that makes sure that you have proper flow of goods into the stores. So they're reporting back what the stock levels are and whether they need to go and order something. So as that happens, this gets all reported into an orders queue that sits in Service Bus, which is also there, which is always available. Then they have web services that are sitting in, and this is part of the Akite solution. They have web services that sit in Windows Azure that actually get that data up. They do all the math and rules on what they're going to do. And then they're reaching back into the LOB service at the retailer's data center or at the inventory service that the retailer runs to push the orders down via the relay service into the retailer's site without the retailer having to open up a port or having to host a complicated solution. So if these retailers are small and medium businesses with a few branches, that's an optimal solution because they don't need to worry about any of the network concerns. They just install apps, and that's all they do, and they get hooked up through Ben Solutions, Akite solution.
Right, just as Clemens pointed out, even in the fan-in scenario where you have all the point-of-sale systems trying to send data in, they don't have to worry about a web layer or a web API or anything to front those endpoints. Every data center where Azure is, you can create service bus queue endpoints. And then point-of-sale systems, whether they be running Windows 8, whether they're running Android, any kind of operating system, they can queue messages in, and you have HTTP-based access, TCP-based access, all of that based on whatever platform you're using. So you get all of that goodness of that endpoint, which is highly available, high performance, all the protocols, API supported, without creating your own front ends. So just to close on the solution profile, you saw that point-of-sale apps had to send messages to queues. On-premises data access was done using relay. And then finally, event notifications between HQ and retail locations happened through a multicast topic and subscriptions. So all of these features were used by Akite.
Oops.
This is the next solution we'll talk about. Here we have a SaaS solution, where they're providing you HPC or heavy compute workloads. So they do a rich amount of video processing for you. Challenge on their end was really having two problems solved for them. One was, again, the same. From your rich client application, how do we ingest data into Azure and control flow into Azure? And then the second is, how do I monitor the progress of all the work which is going on? Both of them, Service Bus proved very useful. Starting with, on the rich client app, the user takes a job, which could be a raw video or a movie file which they have or something, and they submit it into the rich client app. The app makes two calls to Azure. One is to a blob store, where it actually uploads all the video content in the raw format, and then it drops a request on the queue. From a queuing perspective, there were a bunch of features these folks were looking for. They wanted to do priority queues for different customers. They wanted to be able to do message count analysis by saying, hey, is my queue size growing? What is the latency my customers would be seeing? And things like that. And they saw Service Bus as a good solution there because we had monitoring on queues and highly available queues. Once the job is in there, the point number three shows you how the controller grabs a job, and then it calls directly into the HPC services, which are other cloud-hosted services, and schedules jobs on them. At that point, the pointer to the blob store is given, the HPC workload goes in, processes the video, and all this time, when this workflow is happening, this whole job is getting done, messages, traces are being sent to topics and subscriptions. Here again, it is a terrific solution of fanning in all this information. You could have multiple cloud services. You could have multiple instances within the cloud service. All of those are machines which you want to know what they are doing in real time. With topics and subscriptions, you get some very, very rich telemetry out because you can say, hey, warnings show up on one subscription, or I want all traces verbose logging on another subscription, which might have much less TTL. Time to live for messages is much low on verbose, and it's much higher on warnings and things like that. So very rich pub-sub system which allows you to do that. And finally, they have a data center, or sort of their NOC operation center, which takes all this telemetry data, makes sure the services are up and running and healthy, and can actually measure the SLAs that the customers are getting based on all this telemetry which they are gathering in there. So those were the key points for this solution. Just to summarize the solution profile, users would submit the job through a rich client app. They are processed through HPC-style workloads, and then monitor progress through topics and subscriptions. Service bus usage is detailed on the slide. The final one is a very, very consumer-facing website. What they do is they help find information on the web about you. So you might be concerned about your college days, or you might be concerned about last night. This is the place to go and find out what data folks have. Or actually, it's more about credit reports and, you know, criminal records or anything, things like that. So the way they had was they already had a consumer website solution. They have the web front ends. It's all their web roles are available, and they have the consumer logging in and working with the website. Their challenge was how to do back-end coordination between different data services, which sometimes they're running on premises of third parties, sometimes they're running in the cloud, or sometimes they're running on their own data center on premises. All these services are where this data is getting aggregated. That's their USP. That data is their USP. How do they then, from their web front ends, securely go and create these workflows and these data flows of, you know, information portal-like requests? They had different tiers of customers. A tier one customer, say, who has a premium account, gets access to 20 services, data services on the back end, whereas a customer who's on a basic account gets access to 10 back-end services. All of that, again, was achieved through PubSub. So walking through the solution profile here, you log into the consumer website and you submit a request. Say, give me the latest report for me. Based on your customer profile, the message is sent to a topic which says, go out to all the relevant services and then bring back the right data for me. This PubSub mechanism allows subscriptions for all of these web services to poll, get a request, prepare the data, and send it all back into a response queue. Now, you can imagine with all the different web roles, with all the different customer sessions, and with all of these data providers, you still need to correlate all that information back up and present a cohesive response on the web role. And all that is possible through the rich session and other features which our queuing provides to really correlate all these different messages back. Our view is not only of a single message, but it's across a set of messages in terms of a session, a message group. We'll see a lot more of this as we walk through the different patterns. Again, just to summarize, data is gathered from several disparate sources, fan-out processing for customer requests, and then the responses from all these different systems are correlated back to present results. Comments?
Yes. So, scaling things out, that's the next set of patterns. That's something that we are currently seeing quite a bit. There's actually some people in the room who have been talking to that about in commercial settings, where it's about scaling things out, where it's about you having devices, something that runs somewhere in, and we'll take an air conditioner as an example, and you need to go and control that air conditioner in some way. So I'm going to show you as a preview to the July issue of MSD Magazine some code, and also I'm going to show you the device. So we're going to switch to Abhishek's computer, where we have set up the wonderful new camera app for Windows 8, okay, which is very helpful. Otherwise, we would have asked for these massive camera things. So we have a little camera connected to here. And that gives us this little device. And I just want to give you a quick insight into what this is. So what we have here is the Gadgeteer, .NET Gadgeteer, Fest Spider from GHI Electronics. What that is a little main board. This is this here. Then we have a networking port. That's an Ethernet module. That's here. And those things just plug into this board. So this is the board. So it just plugs into those things. Then there's a temperature sensor. This. There's a display, which you can see. There's at the back of this, here, there's a relay that will allow you to switch a fan off or on. And then there's a little joystick that I can go and use to go and control temperature. So this thing is hooked up to the network. However, it's not completely happy with that network today. So I will not be able to run a particular part of this demo. I will now disconnect this device and turn it on again so that it boots. What it will do during this phase is it's going to read some settings from its local storage. If it doesn't find local storage, so this is now booting, it will go out to a web service that we're going to take a look at, and it's going to provision itself. If it doesn't have any local settings, if it's just if it's in an unprovisioned state, it will then negotiate effectively some settings. It will then boot up and will then sit on Service Bus and receive messages for Service Bus to control the temperature. The functionality here, as you can see on the screen, is there's a target temperature that's being set, and there's a temperature that's measured. So currently we have 24.73 degrees Celsius. This is a Celsius device. I apologize, but I'm German. I can't deal with Fahrenheit. Now, a saturated saltwater scale doesn't compute for me. And so what you see is that this is now on, and I can go and with this stick, I can actually go and modify this target temperature so I can drive it up, hopefully. Yes. So I can go up with that temperature, and so now we're at 21.5, 22, 22.5, 23, 24, 24.5, and now the fan should turn off. Oh, no, it actually got hotter. Come on. 25, fan turns off. So that's the functionality. So what we're doing here is we're collecting telemetry from this device, basically getting how warm it is in the house, and then also creating a path to talk to that device. Talking to the path, of course, of talking to the device, that's something that that currently the device doesn't want to do. So, but I'll show you all the code for it. Once we get through the basics of But the basic provisioning work and all this works, but just that one call doesn't work. Here are the basics. The device is hooked up into needs to be hooked up into the system in two ways. We need a way for the device to send telemetry into our backend system for three purposes. The first purpose is, and this is the scenario, is to allow someone to buy an air conditioning device, right, in the store, put this into their house and hook it up to the network. The way you do this is you push a button on that device and you push a button on your Wi-Fi router, the two things pair, the thing has network. You can buy those chips, you can actually get those for Gadgeteer, very easy to pair. The device that I have here, the pieces that I showed you, is about $200. If you were not as shy of a soldering iron as I am, it would be a lot cheaper, but this is for prototyping those things. So I'll show you that in detail as soon as we get to the code. The event store is there so that you can see your personal trends. So the event store allows you to effectively go in with your mobile app. You walk up to the cloud application, and the cloud application will go and plot you a trend of how your temperatures are in the house and what the status of your device is, blah, 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 your energy consumption and all this. The analytics is for the energy company. Because in this scenario here, the energy company is actually subsidizing you buying these air conditioners with that electronics, with these special electronics and this service. Why are they interested in it? Because assume you're living in somewhere in the south, like Orlando, and there's a heat wave, right? This is not heat wave, this is normal, but assume there's a heat wave. Or assume you're living somewhere else in America, in the south, or in a hot place. There's a thing in America I heard about, it's called rolling brownouts. Well, I live in Seattle. We have rolling rain, but we don't have rolling brownouts. So one of the things that, so the energy companies have three grand problems, and of course I have people who are dealing with energy companies in the audience, and they're now going to slap me that I'm an idiot. First is just pure capacity management in times of grand need. So it would be beautiful if they had a way to just go and, you know, turn everybody's temperature up a notch on the air conditioning and say, you know, instead of all of us having no air conditioning, how about you have it a little more uncomfortable, and I can override from, let's say, 67 to 78. That'd be nice, because then all the air conditioning systems would take less energy and you would have an emergency override switch. So that's one thing. Second is, as more and more people, and that's something that is more concern in Europe because of the subsidies than here right now, are producing energy out of their house. Well, they have their own wind generators, they have their own solar cells. The energy is going to spin backward. The energy meter is going to spin backward, which means you're contributing energy into the grid. And now the power plants need to be powered down if the sun shines. That's the second thing. Third thing, electric car. Now, we're currently driving dead dinosaurs. You know, everybody's filling their tank with dead dinosaurs. If dead dinosaurs are no longer the source, the primary source of energy for our cars, instead it's dead dinosaurs which get burned in power plants that then get transported to us through the power grid, that energy needs to be added to the power grid in some way, and I talked about rolling brownouts. So there's also capacity management needs to be done there. So these analytics, let's stick with the air conditioner, are important to do prediction of how is the grid doing, to kind of get some insight into the energy consumption and into what are the settings of everybody and what do I need to do in terms of education because capacity planning. So that's important. But for that, I don't need to have all the data. On the control side, this is for the override switch. This is for two things. Either I have an app in my pocket where I can go and just turn the temperature in my house up and down, which means now I can target an individual device. I can target the air conditioner that hangs outside of my living room. Or I can target all the air conditioners in my house. So I might have five different units. So I'm going to target all of them. Or I want to go and have I'm the master override switch owner in the power company, and I'm going to go and override the whole region just to make sure that the grid doesn't go down. Now that's all easy if I only have three of those things. That gets really chilly in an architectural sense if I have to think about really wiring up a region. If I have suddenly 3 million households, how does that work? What we're finding is very interesting in those scenarios. What we're finding is we're starting to talk to people who have enormous experience in building these hardware devices, in building all these control things, but who are coming to us and are scratching their head and said, how am I going to scale a service up to 100,000 anything? Because that's a different world. And so we're starting to see this, and it's a very interesting challenge also for us. How do we bridge that gap? And that's why we're really interested in that, and we're trying to help in those cases. So here in this piece, we have a topic that gets the data in and then fans out the topic into three different areas. Control, that's the control feedback loop, into analytics, which is the analytics store, and then into the event store, which is the local store where you get all the data out. In the event store, you hold all the events, you shard them up by customer so that the customer can get to their bucket. In analytics, you roll them up so that you get the essence of that data, get rolled up data you can go and process. And in control, you effectively just get the feedback loop. On the outbound side, on the topic that has the subscriptions up on the top, you send control commands into that topic, and with that, you can now target one device, because the rule on that subscription will say device ID equals so-and-so, or household ID equals so-and-so, or neighborhood equals so-and-so, or whatever groupings you want. You basically just put a rule in that creates a zoning for that device, where that is. It sits in a household, it sits in a neighborhood, or on a certain street. Or a block, and it sits in a certain town. So you kind of have a targeting ability to do all those things. So you basically put that into that subscription. And then you hook the device up to that. Now, we have some natural limits on the system, so we need to go and think about scaling. Scaling is something, and if you take anything away from this talk, take away the concept of scale units, and take that away even if you don't think about service bus at all. So the way we think about scale units is something that is something we introduced in our system as an architectural principle, which is we will not scale up our system randomly. We're doing auto scale. We have metrics, thresholds that we look at, and then we do very intentional scale up of our system to a particular maximum. Our system our service bus systems are tested to particular scale points. So we have 4, 6, 12, 15, or sorry, no, 32, 96 scale points of cores, which distributed across several roles. And these are tested configurations that we know are stable. And we will not go over 96 cores on front ends, because there's cross-coordination that needs to be done on the front ends, et cetera, so we won't go over those. What we will do instead is we will stand up a completely separate system on the side, right? Another scale unit, and so as we need to scale up, we add scale units, but they have known scale characteristics. So we'll never go outside of our known scale characteristics. We're never going to try to put 10 million things onto one thing, because that would be crazy. Because every time we take a connection into the system, that costs us a TCP receive buffer. A TCP receive buffer on a good day is 64K kernel memory. You scale that up to several thousand, you know what you're getting. That starts to be a lot of memory. There's some compute costs associated with that. So what we do is we effectively constrain the scalability to those scale units and then allocate namespaces into those scale units. So we propose that you do the same thing. You take a number of resources where you know the scale characteristics, and you're actually doing a conservative guess on the capacity of those things, and group them together so that you know the numbers on every single one of those pieces, and group them together into a unit, and then treat that as a scale unit, and then scale across them by sharding your audiences across them. So here's one of those examples. We have a mobile site, and we have these ingestion topics for the devices, and we have these fan-out topics for the devices. The ingestion topics, we may have multiple, and for the fan-out topics, we may have multiple, but there's a we're constraining them to keep the management to keep them manageable, and we're also constraining them so that we don't overstress our event store and the statistics topics where the data comes out into. So then it becomes a math game. The ingestion topic, or the topics in general, our topics can do, if you come from afar, let's say, I'll just say a number, 2,500 messages per second at 1 kilobyte payload for each message. That's okay. However, for the purposes of planning, I'm just going to cut that in half generously. I'm going to say it's 1,000 messages per second. That is entity throughput. Entity throughput means this is how many messages the thing can go and take and spread. So if you have 1,000 subscriptions and I sent one message in, well, that's 1,000 messages out. So that's what the flow rate then is going to be, one message per second through that whole thing. So if you need to have that higher, you go and make shallower, you need narrower topics with fewer subscription, but you make many of them on the side. If that's enough, you just keep fewer topics because they're easier to manage. But what you'll do is you'll take a number of devices, let's say 25, 30,000, and declare them a scale unit. And then as you provision new devices, you basically just assign them to those scale units, and then you give them the address of their ingestion topic, and you also give them the address of the associated subscription, because that's also what you're going to allocate. On the back end, there's going to be a storage writer. Now, that's the thing that will actually constrain you. The storage writer will write the data into an event store, and then also the aggregator will go and roll up data as it gets the events. It will do an aggregation over time. Stream Insight is a wonderful technology for that. And then write that further down into a statistics topic where the data goes for further analysis. You can't get more events. You can't take more events than you can actually write down to the event store. So there are also some limitations there. So whatever you have at the limitations at the bottom will also inform your limitations up to the top of how big your scale unit can be. The nice thing with this here, if you think about targeting individual devices, getting data from individual devices, is typically this is easily shardable, because you get distinct data streams from the device, and you get distinct data streams to the device, so you can very easily shard this. And you can go and concentrate the essence of that data in a big store that sits in the back and go and query that. But just the whole management and communication with those things is completely nicely isolatable with a model like this. So if you take one thing with you, it's make scale units where you know all the characteristics of all the pieces. That's something you can get in your head. That's something you can measure, and then start making many of these scale units side by side. That's exactly how we operate. We have 10, 15 scale units in the data centers with various roles, and they all stand side by side. So for event ingestion, you're going to go and partition inside of a scale unit. You're going to partition this out, and each of them kind of sits on the pillar where you have an ingestion topic. You have a trio of subscriptions. One is for the storage writer. We have a compute process which pulls on it. You have an aggregator, and you have the command and control feedback. So you're going to pair effectively each of these topics with a pair of roles or role instances that actually pull the data out and do the further processing, and then drive this down into the statistics topics, which now gets the essence of the data. So you take the raw data in, you do the aggregation, you roll the data up, so you say you only forward trends over an hour. You might get events more frequently from all kinds of households. You roll them up, so you get trends on a per neighborhood basis, not necessarily on a per device basis, probably on a per household basis. You do roll up. Stream Insight, as I said, is a good tool for this. And then you go into the analytics store, and then you can also do real-time analytics, where you can go and put up a dashboard and basically inform that dashboard with the real-time data that comes in after you've rolled that up. Command fanout, you have a control system. The control system is something that allows you to have a web service that an application on the mobile device can go and call to control the individual device's temperature settings, etc. Or you have the central control system for a building automation company or for someone who's doing commercial building control or for the energy company. And they will send the data out into the topics and then go and hit the individual subscriptions. A new feature which we're going to add to Service Bus in the fall is called Auto Forward, which is allowing you to create a topic and then on the subscription have an auto forward into another topic. So you can create these fan out trees where you can have a first level topic, send the data in, you have a number of subscriptions. Off those subscriptions, you can hook up automatically with an automatic flow another topic. You can create a fan-out tree where you can now effectively send one message in and then target millions of subscriptions at the same time, but with an acceptable flow rate. So that's the model for how to do those things. You just make trees of topics to do command and control, and then you do these reducing operations, these aggregations, to go and collect statistics, roll up statistics. And you create these scale units that you stand side by side. So there's more detail and probably a little bit of even more coherent explanation, in the article, in the MSDN Magazine article that you can find online. So one important part here is provisioning. Because once you have one of those devices, you need to tell that device how it gets its config. There's two general ways how to do that provisioning model. One is, if you're familiar with how Netflix works on the Xbox or on most devices, is one where you do a handshake ahead of time and then get a security code. So the way this works is you turn on the device. The device comes up and says, I don't know who I am. And then it says, well, it calls Netflix, and Netflix gives it a code, and it shows you that code. And then you go to the Netflix site, to the activation site, and go and log in, and then enter that code. Now Netflix has your account, and it has that code, so it can pair that device to you. So now the device knows who it is and gets the necessary information from the Netflix service to do that. And you'll see that replicated all over the place. A device like this one, like the one that we have here, that device has a little bit of a harder time because, well, this one has a screen, so I could do that here, but you know, not necessarily all machines have that. So with those, the device has a factory installed ID. Every one of those devices which has a network controller actually has an ID because it has a MAC address. So you take the MAC address, and as you ship the devices out, you make a whitelist on the provisioning service that contains all the MAC addresses that you've shipped. As the device shows up, it says, hello, this is me. And by the way, my MAC address is the following. You do that over a protected path, HTTPS. And then you have a partition allocator. And the partition allocator now says, I'm going to place you, because of the load and how we're looking, I'm going to place you into scale unit 50. It puts into scale unit 50, and then it goes and makes a subscription, and it allocates that to the topic, and then also grants the necessary rights on the access control service to the device, and then returns a package of configuration to that device to do that. So we're going to take a look at that piece of the code. I am on three. Good. So this is the device code. This is the, oops, not that. What did I do? I did something that's terrible. I really wanted to show the pretty picture. Where's the pretty picture gone? Something destroyed it. Hang on. Don't go away. Visual Studio, what did you do? So if you install the .NET Gadgeteer SDK, so you go to netmf.com to get all the information. So you can build those, you can buy those devices, and you can basically just go and plug them together. Once you plug them together, you take this tool, and you draw the picture of what you plug together. So this is exactly how this device works, and you have all these pieces in a visual way in that SDK. It's pretty exciting. And it's, so you have the USB client and power supply. You got the joystick, you got the display, you got the Ethernet port, you got the relay, and you got the humidity sensor. So you plug all this together, and that gives you kind of this the code behind file that wires all these things up, And then you can write your program to do funky things. So here's my program. And my program starts, and then we go and start initialize the network. We initialize temperature sensors. We initialize the joystick. That's all somewhat interesting, but not too much. And then we go and say, initialize the network. That's the interesting part. If the network is up, then we go and go to network is available. This is where we start. And then we go down to this one, network available. Well, we're going to get ourselves the physical address and keep that. And now if the network is up, then we're going to set the local time. This is something that's interesting about those devices. They don't have a battery, right? So there's no buffered clock, which means the first thing you do if you see the network, if you want to do anything that has to do with HTTPS or anything to do with security, you need to have the wall clock, which means there's an NTP client here to go and get the wall clock time. That's the first thing we're going to do. And then we check whether the network provisioning was completed, which means do we already have that local settings? And if we do, if we don't, then we're going to perform the provisioning. The provisioning is done here, where we're going to call effectively with our device ID the provisioning service. Mind what I'm doing here is I'm just sending a header with no content. That's what I call personally. This is not a standard. This is just a convention that I made up. So take that with a grain of salt, which I call NHTTP, no hypertext transfer protocol. And it's a very simple profile of HTTP, and the only rule is you can't send an entity body. All the data goes in headers. You know why? Because it turns out with JSON, even though it's simpler than XML with all the weird rules, I don't even need a parser with this. Because every HTTP stack knows how to parse HTTP headers. And HTTP is extensible. The spec says that every intermediary must pass all HTTP headers through, even if it doesn't know them. So it's an extensible model. So what I'm doing is I'm simply adding a header, my payload, as p-dash, so I can parse it out. I can easily see what I've added. I just add that as p-dash and then set the content length to 0 and use that as the payload message. And I get the response back from that provisioning service in the back, and this is how I get my data. So I'm just getting that from the headers. Header-only payloads, key-value pairs, simplest profile of HTTP in the world, no entity body. That is pretty awesome. And it's so simple. No parser. Go do that. Also independent of using Service Bus. So this thing now talks to the backend. The backend is here. There's a Windows Azure role. Here's the provisioning service. And the provisioning service goes and calls this setup device functionality, which now grabs the device out. Do you see how easy that is? No parsing, no nothing. There's no input parameters, no output parameters. And now it goes and takes this, checks the allow list. This is a mock method. I'm not actually checking a list here, but I would. And then I'm creating a new device configuration object, and I'm creating a service identity. Creating the service identity means I'm now creating an identity in ACS for that device, because every device needs to have a way to talk directly to Service Bus. So I'm creating the service identity here, for which I'm using a set of tools that we built for the Service Bus SDK that's powering the SBAZ tool that I showed in the last session. So I'm using that code to create a new identity and set also the signing key and save that. And then I set that onto the referenced device config object. And then I go and create and secure the entities that I need. So what I need in terms of entities is I need to have a subscription, and I need to have rights for the device to send data into the ingress topic, and also I need to have rights for the device to read from the subscription. So I do that here. And if I use plain HTTP mode, I actually need to have plain HTTP mode as a mode where I don't use HTTPS because a lot of devices can't do that. So I have this pass-through service that I have in here, which I have my own gateway. But we'll take a look at this, where I'm effectively creating the new subscription on the devices topic. So It's called devices, and I'm creating a new subscription for that device. And then I'm granting send. We're not going to go and take a look at that just in the interest of time. I'm granting send on that event topic, on the inbound topic, to the device. And granting listen on the device subscription. So now I have an account for that device that has a secret key. That secret key is now enabling the device to do exactly two operations on Service Bus. Send into a topic, a particular topic, and listen from a particular subscription. It can't do anything else. But that's exactly what we want it to do, right? It's home, and it has exclusive access to that one subscription to fetch data to, so we get that full isolation. And then once all this is done, I effectively take that configuration package that I just created and go and then set that back into the headers and then send that back to the device, and the device then stores that in its non-volatile memory for the next time it's powered up. And then the device now has all the data it needs to go and talk to Service Bus and from Service Bus. Now, so much for the code. What we're going to do in the future with this is we're going to build this out. We have a new protocol that's cooking. The new protocol is cooking with a larger number of industry partners. It's called AMQP, the Advanced Message Queuing Protocol. We've made a number of contributions to that protocol in the recent 2 years, and we're actively engaged in that community. David Ingham from our team is a co-editor of the specification. And so AMQP is one of the protocols that's interesting here, because with AMQP, we'll be able to get the sockets more quiet, right? Be more power aware. Because this solution here, the code you'll be able to download with the MSDN article, that's how you're going to get to this. I'm not going to share this now, but I have to share this when the article comes out on July 1st. That data, that uses HTTP. Now, HTTP long polling is nice, and we keep the socket quiet for a minute, but it's not good if the device runs on battery, because you still have to, and especially if you're running on 3G, because you keep the device in high gain, which means you're burning more battery than you should. So we're working on AMQP and a particular AMQP profile to make that work better. So you can go and do this at high scale, but with a relatively quiet socket profile. So much for devices. So that's not truly futurist, because you can actually start doing those things now. But you're gonna see us optimize for that use case dramatically within the next 12 to 18 months, and we have a number of projects that we've started in that area with commercial partners, and we think that's a very exciting thing and a lot of potential for not only these devices apps, but the same patterns also apply if you're building mobile applications or applications on Windows 8 that you distribute to consumers through the App Store, and you also need to have that kind of communication. With that, I'll hand it to Abhishek.
Thank you. Clemens, as you got excited, I saw the temperature sensor was catching an uptick in the temperature.
It was.
So hopefully we'll cool things back down.
Good.
if you don't mind, with a show of hands, how many of you have written code maybe in the last 6 months?
Awesome.
Nice. How many folks here have actually used anything in Windows Azure till now? Beautiful. Excellent. There's a nuance about Service Bus. A lot of our services are used by folks who don't use anything else in Azure too. You can think about a lot of scenarios like we went through where you might not have compute roles. All of your stuff might be on-premise and everything, but you have devices, you have smartphones, you have any kind of clients you want to reach out to through the cloud, and you can do that using Service Bus, just the PaaS service itself. But we'll walk through that. So jumping back into patterns, what we'll walk through now is some of the classic patterns like PubSub, recipient list, and things like that, where you're getting all these messages. These messages could be from backend systems like BizTalk. These messages could be from devices like smartphones, or they could be from industrial devices like you just saw. How do you actually manage these messages? What are the different kinds of things you do with them? What messaging topologies can you create using Service Bus? channel patterns are anything which sort of decide who gets a message or, you know, where the message is going from and where to. PubSub is the first channel pattern where essentially a sender is broadcasting an event to all interested receivers. So a single message sent, various copies distributed. So that's the first key difference from a queue. A queue is one message in, one message out. PubSub is one message in, many out. The simplest use case is event notifications. This is all the code that you need to write in Service Bus. Now, we recently released tooling in Visual Studio. We already have tooling or sort of UI experience in the portal. And if you look at all these four operations, these can be done from any of those avenues. So setting up a topic and setting three subscriptions on it is very, very easy to do right from the portal or from Visual Studio tooling or from lines of code. If you don't mind switching, Clement.
Oh, yes, I will switch happily.
Now, I do have this application. It's a console application.
Wait, this is Twitter. How's that happening?
This application is a console app which creates a topic, creates three subscriptions, just as I showed you in code, and then sends a bunch of messages all through the topic. I'm going to F5 it, and what you're going to see here is the most simple PubSub implementation of a single message sent to the topic is received as is by all the subscriptions. So you can we saw various scenarios, like with devices. You saw I want the device should send its temperature, but there are three parties who are interested in it. It's the analytics, it's the controller, as well as the event store. All of them get their own copies of messages. Think of it as individual queues at their end. So the controller could be working very fast, doing real-time reads, whereas the storage subscription could have gone to sleep. All its messages will be stored for it for as long as the message lifetime is set, and it can come back and get its messages. Switch back.
Yes. I'll be your switching man.
The next pattern which we'll walk through is a content-based router. Now you want to make a decision. You want to say, not all messages go to everyone. I actually want to decide, based on the content of the message, where the message goes through. This is a key sort of pattern which you'll see in order processing systems, where if my order maybe comes from a particular region, or maybe it contains departmental information, like I have an electronics order. I only want to route it to the electronics department. I don't want to send it to the, say, you know, clothing department, something like that.
But also what we had seen in the device, what I explained in the devices scenario, where you want to target a device or a household or a region. So you have a routing based on identity of a particular thing.
Absolutely. So any properties in a brokered message which you set, these are the brokered message properties, you can create filters and rules on, which will then let you, based on the content of the message, route the message. Again, I'm doing the same operation. I'm creating a single topic, and I'm creating three subscriptions. But notice here, I'm passing in a SQL filter to each of these operations. The first one is an audit. I want all the messages. By default, if you create a subscription, you get all messages on it. So nothing passed in there. The second one is a filter which says category equal to one, and the third one is category not equal to one. So what have I done here? You could think of it as priorities. High priority orders go in a separate queue or a subscription. Low priority or any other priority orders go into another queue. A simple example like that. When I'm sending the message, which is actually setting the message properties and stuff, all I need to do is now set the category property. Whatever value I set it to, as you can see, I'm just setting to a simple int, will determine at the end of the day where the message gets delivered. Don't mind switching?
Yes, sir.
So the same code here is running in a console app, and I'm going to do the same operation, except this time I'm going to be setting random category properties between, you know, 1 and 3. And you'll see only when the property is set to 1, the category 1, that subscription gets those messages. Whereas the last subscription on the screen, the category not 1, will not see any of those green messages. It doesn't see any of those high priority orders or anything. So here you've started to do some kind of partitioning, where you're saying my workload is managed by two different sets of workers. One goes in the high priority queue, one goes in the low priority queue, something like that.
Switch?
Switch.
Just checking.
Thank you. The next pattern is a slight variation on the content-based router. What this does is, when you think of a recipient list, think email, right? The key difference in email is I decide who the mail goes to. So I want to be able to address specific users. In the previous example, let's say if you had a retailer like Best Buy and you were sending it orders, Best Buy could keep adding more and more electronics vendors and they would all get your electronics orders, or you know, they would get requests for quotes for electronic orders. All you said was, hey, I'm interested in this electronics item. In a recipient list pattern, the sender decides who gets this message. Remember when we talked about that consumer website, this was the thing they wanted to do. They wanted to send out a message and target exact services which the customer had paid for, to say this message should be delivered to those services who will then send a response and I will correlate the response from them. Let's see how that is achieved. Still on the slides.
Okay.
The difference here now is, again, I'm setting up SQL filters. By the way, we have two kinds of filters. We have correlation filters and SQL filters. Correlation are just on the correlation property. There's a correlation ID property on the message. It's an equality filter on that string property. SQL filter is the very, very rich sort of full SQL 92 language. You can use all message properties, some functions in there. Now notice how the filters are set up here. Address like first and address like second. Which means I have in my filter added a like clause for my own address. So now the sender, as you can see below, can target a message and say, hey, the address I want to send through is first, the address I want to send through is second, or I want to send it to both. Let's see how that works.
Did I anticipate that right?
Absolutely.
Good.
In this example, you'll again see us sending messages in random sort of order where we've set the property of address to either first, second, or first and second. And again, very, very neatly, without you having to write any different code, you're able to get those particular messages in the right subscription. The ordered subscription on top, of course, gets all messages. The first address and the second address get only messages addressed to them or to both the receivers. The other great advantage you get of this, and this sort of Clemens also alluded to in terms of scale, when you start off, maybe two is good enough, you know, first and second. But as time goes on and you sort of onboard more customers and more customers, you might have to scale out your receivers and scale out your system by needing more and more subscriptions. Your message flow is growing higher. Given that all we are doing here is setting rules on the subscription, it's almost a management operation to go on the portal or go on Visual Studio tooling, change the filter, and the messages start flowing differently. So another great advantage there. Message routing. This next set builds on the previous set. So we're done with the basic messaging patterns. The message routing patterns build on the previous set. And this is where you start seeing sort of the first inklings of having to deal with groups of messages. Splitter is an example. I talked about orders, right? I can send one order message and make sure it goes to the electronics department or it goes through a different department. But most of the time on the web, when I submit an order on the website, it contains all the items. The user doesn't come and choose every single item or choose by department or anything. So how are you going to achieve that particular scenario? That pattern is talked about as a splitter, where you take a single message and then you actually break it up into different pieces. How you break it up can be completely, based on your context, whether it's for parallel processing, in the HPC workload kind of thing, you just want to make small jobs out of it, or you want to make some contextual decision, you can do that. Again, the way you'll be able to achieve that is using topics and subscriptions, because you can now split based on the content which message goes to whom. Once you have split those messages up, now you've fanned out all your requests into different systems. They all need to come back and aggregate together. They need to come back and sort of work into one coherent response. That's the aggregator pattern. There are two key aspects of the aggregator pattern. One is that it needs to detect completion. How do you know when you're done? How do you know when you're aggregated? I'll give you a couple of examples. On the consumer website, if you look at their UI, the way their UI goes is, as results start coming in from different providers, they'll start updating the UI. So there, it is nothing but a simple time-based completion, which says when the user looks at all his results, he can decide when he's done, or even halfway through, he can decide I'm done with the job and move on. The other could be the messages themselves contain information. So, for example, if there is a loan provider or something like that, they could tell you that I'm going to send this out and you should expect at least 3 quotes back from your loan application. So you can wait for 3 responses and then say, I am done, now I'll send the full result message. So, if you're competing for loans, I've got at least three, now I'm going to send that back. And there again, we have features which will let you do that. You can time out by creating time limits, or you can count how many messages you get and stop on that. The common use cases here, like we already talked about, are distributed query systems. I'm going to ask a bunch of systems for data. They're all going to send me responses, and there could be parallel sessions going on to all of them, and I want to correlate these responses. Order processing systems also benefit from this. Now, when you're implementing this with Service Bus, there is one strategy which I will cover, but there are, in the interest of time, but there are other ways in which to achieve this too. But right now, I'll just cover one. And that is the use of session state. More and more, like I said, when you start using a cloud application, which is very stateful, you want something which is transactional and reliable to store your state in the cloud. If it's a banking system, you want to make sure the transaction is complete end-to-end before committing. Or if it is an order processing system, you want the same transactional guarantee. Given that in mind, we've created a session state object. What it does is, when you're receiving messages in a session, like I said, it's just a group of messages, you keep receiving them and you can store a state for that one session.
So the basic mechanics here for sessions is that you have a queue or subscription marked with require session. Once you've marked that as require session, you send messages into that session full queue where you simply set the session ID of every individual message to a string that is the same. Everything that is using the same session ID, like a job ID in this case, is landing in the same session. The nice characteristic of session is you're accepting a session receiver instead of receiving a message. And what that will do is it will lock that session, everything with that message, with that session ID, to that particular receiver. So if you have one receiver from on one thread on one machine, going and getting that session out of the service bus queue, all the messages labeled with that same session ID come to that receiver. And that receiver can now actually take notes of where it is in processing in that session state object that's also stored with the queue.
Absolutely. And all of these operations you can do in transactions. So which means you can be very, very sure that you did a receive, you updated the session state, and then maybe you deferred a message, and all that happens in one transaction.
You have code?
Yes. Actually, one more second. I think I have one more slide to cover.
Good. Sorry.
Right. So this just walks through what you will be seeing in terms of the session state. And this is the key piece of code which you have to do. Clemens already walked through a little bit. When you create an item, you say it requires session right up top. When you create messages, you set the session ID property that defines which group it belongs to, which session it belongs to. And then when you're receiving, note you're no longer receiving a single message. You're saying, give me the next available session. In this case, we also let you pick sessions. So you can say accept session and actually give the session ID too. So whichever of those two models work better for you, you're able to do that with complete flexibility. Switch to code, please.
Yes, sir.
The example which I'm going to show you here running is a resequencer. It's a fairly advanced scenario, so it doesn't demo well, but hopefully we'll get a glimpse of what you're trying to do. The goal here is I'm going to get a bunch of messages, but they're all out of order. Think of it as putting together reports or putting together orders or anything where you're getting things out of order. How am I actually going to achieve the fact that I have messages coming in which I'm not ready to deal with and I need to move on? But I want to track that message has been received. On the left, I created three senders. All of these three senders are a little different. The first sender sends category 0 messages, which means it's a single sender who's sending out of order messages. The second and the third ones actually send category 1 and 2 both. So now you can think of disparate systems who are sending messages in different sessions, which is out of order too. So any sender sending messages which are all out of order, but they need to be correlated by their categories. So note what's happening on the receiver side. I start off with accepting the next available session. I got session ID 0. That's just the next available session. I see sequence number 0 and 1, but right after that, I see sequence number 3. What am I going to do? I'm not ready for 3 at this point. Couple of things. In my session state, I will say, I have seen messages 0, 1, and I have seen message 3. I will save that in the session state, and I will defer the message. This is another operation we give you in Service Bus, message.defer. Now that you've stored the fact that you have seen message 3, you can defer it, but always have that ID to go get that message back. What happens next? Message 2 shows up. Great, I'm ready to process it. I move on. Suddenly, 5, 6, and 4 show up next. In that operation now, I go back, look at my session state, and I'm able to see, hey, I had seen 3 before. Now I have deferred 5, 6, and 4. So then I go pull out 3, and so on and so forth.
The nice thing about this is this works when the receiver crashes. So this is kind of the hidden feature here is because we use the session state and because there is this interaction between the peak lock feature where you take the message but the lock the message and then wait for processing until you complete it, and the interaction with the session feature, and having transactional complete plus the set state, what we give you here is effectively super robust way of doing that kind of processing, even if your process crashes or the Windows Azure Fabric Controller comes around and shoots your role in the head.
Right. So you can imagine now, I have a single console app doing all these receives. You can have a scaled out ton of worker roles or servers, all of them doing this, and they are all going to be able to work in parallel. They are all going to be able to work together, not competing with each other in terms of the same messages and the same group and everything, and still achieve what they want. So that's the last demo for today. Switch back to the slides. You will have these slides available. We talk about a little bit of detail in terms of the couple of remaining patterns. The resequencer you already saw. There are composite integration patterns, which basically combine these aggregators and splitters. And scatter gather is another variation in terms of that.
So you can refer to those in the deck. So that's what we had, a number of customer use cases. We have shown you kind of the devices story, how we think about that, and a number of enterprise integration patterns as described in Gregor's book, and how you can implement on Service Bus. What are we going to do with those demos? Or where are we going to put them?
They are all available as samples on code.msdn.com/windows-azure. All of these are available. I've got a blog post on them. I'll be at the booths later. If you have any questions, drop by and stuff. Been a great audience.
Thank you for coming. Have a good last day at TechEd.